This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast on the Incomparable Network dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and for each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan to come and talk about Voyager. For this episode, I am very pleased to welcome James Thompson. Hey, James, how's it going?
Pretty good. You know, it's one of those all things considered questions, but yes. Pretty good.
All things considered is like one of my mental text expander type snippets. Whatever I say, tack on all things considered. So I certainly understand that. I'm really glad you could come onto this podcast so we could talk about Star Trek, because I know we have done so in more group-oriented podcasts, and I know we both like Star Trek, so here we are, just the two of us. And before we dive into Star Trek, why don't you tell the Voyager Revisited listeners a little bit about yourself?
I'm an app developer known for a scientific calculator called PCalc, at least to some. Possibly the incomparable people might know me more from being on that and being on Total Party Kill and various other things. But I'm whatever you want me to be, really.
Well, I am also an enthusiastic user of Dice by PCalc, your dice rolling app, which I have used sometimes just so I don't have to hunt down my six-sided die for a game of Random Pursuit. But the last time I played, there were definitely a preponderances of six, which tends to be sports-oriented categories, and I said I was going to complain to you.
I think it would be appropriate to say I cannot change the laws of physics.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm relieved to hear that. So, James, have you been a Star Trek fan like your whole life?
Yeah. I mean, like when I grew up, they had the original series was on television in the UK. You know, this was like in the 80s or something like that. I'm not that old. But it was then, like, we didn't get Next Generation for quite a while. So a lot of sort of the, I was going to say the modern Star Trek series, they're not the modern Star Trek series anymore.
You're right.
Those shows I mostly watched off, like, VHS tapes borrowed from Blockbuster. We would, like, rent, like, two or three of the tapes that would have four episodes per tape, and we would just sit and marathon through, you know, binge watching back before it was trendy. And so we did Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and then I think we watched like the first chunk of Voyager before we moved away to Ireland. And then I think we actually could watch the things live at that point. I remember watching the finale of Voyager at Apple's developer conference.
Oh. So, wow.
But I think they put it up on the big screen for some reason. Well, because it was a room full of like 5,000 nerds that wanted to see the finale of Voyager. But I've rewatched subsequently Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, but I haven't actually got round yet to rewatching Voyager. So this was probably the second time I've seen this episode, and completely out of sync of you know, having seen the rest of the series around it. But it's quite interesting because it is quite standalone. There's not very much arc stuff in this.
No, that's true. Yeah, we watched together. We watched the episode called Flashback, which is really interesting. You know, for its background, it came out 30 years almost to the date after the first Star Trek original series episode aired. So it was intended to be a 30th anniversary celebration of Star Trek, and by having George Takei as Sulu come back, you know, and have a major guest starring role, I think that was just genius and a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I hadn't realized, because I watched DS9 in its entirety, I think, before I watched any of Voyager. So I didn't realize that Trials and Tribulations was kind of mm-hmm. also the 30th anniversary episode.
Where the guest stars were visual affected into the show.
Where the guest stars probably weren't paid.
Yeah. No, really? Well, I don't know about that. Actually, I guess Trials and Tribulations had did have the original Klingon spy actor coming back in it, so they did manage to have somebody from the original episode. But
and I think that episode didn't have George Takei or Grace Lee Whitney or anybody in it because they weren't in original Star Trek at that point.
Yeah, they weren't in that episode for sure.
So it means that basically they got the full set back for the 30th anniversary, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It is certainly fun to see Grace Lee Whitney as Janice Rand again. And yeah, I enjoyed that. And of course, what Voyager is doing in this episode, Flashback, is a flashback to something that was a film 5 years earlier. So creating or recreating the scene wasn't as big of a leap as for the DS9 cast to go back to a 1960s episode of Star Trek.
I think I watched this episode before I watched Star Trek VI. So I didn't realize when watching it that it was, you know, calling back to very specific scenes and things from that film. So it was just, to my mind, it was like, oh, they've got Sulu back.
Yeah, I don't think I made the connection probably the first time I watched it either, or I hadn't watched Star Trek VI, the film, in so many years, I kind of forgot. But it is pretty amazing that they put together a very great recreation of the first bits of Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country, with Sulu and with Janice Rand, and also with a couple of bridge officers that came back 5 years later to recreate their roles. And I thought that was really neat.
I mean, if I had been in the film and they asked me to come back and do an episode, I would definitely say yes. Just because, I believe Nichelle Nichols was asked to be in this episode as well. And she said no. She said no because the role was so small.
Yeah, and apparently because they had left time in the episode to have Nichelle Nichols in a cameo, they had to beef up some of their other scenes. So I'm afraid in this episode you get more Neelix instead of any Uhura.
So I'd watched it, I'd made notes as I went through, and I'd written down 5 minutes of breakfast with Neelix. And then it was afterwards that I read the thing that they were 5 minutes short on the episode, and it was this scene, and I think one of the scenes with Kes was added. But yeah, it does feel like, you know, okay, let's just put the camera on Neelix, Ethan Phillips, and let him go and talk about eggs for a few minutes, because I was just watching this thinking, this is quite a long time we're spending.
Yes. You know, Neelix and Tuvok are one of the, you know, interesting pairs of frenemies on Star Trek Voyager. So I thought it moved their friendship, you know, gave us another, you know, view of how they operate.
Yeah, I mean, it just, for me, I was thinking about, you know, what are the logistics of Neelix doing the catering? You know, does he only serve breakfast to the bridge crew? Because that's a really small room. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know off the top of my head what the crew size of Voyager is, but I imagine it's quite a lot.
I can tell you. It's not that many compared to other series. It's only 139 that they started off with. They could theoretically have a cafeteria that seats, it seems like that cafeteria probably seats like 30 or 40 people.
Yeah, I'd say 30 or 40. So then I guess they might cycle around because, you know, who knows when, what's considered night or day
right.
in space. But I don't know. I was just thinking, like, Do the rest of the crew only get like replicator dishes? Are they better off because they're getting replicator dishes?
No, it is a good question. And especially in that scene in flashback, Neelix is making breakfast for Tuvok and they have some kind of, you know, power overload that burns the food. And just at that moment, something is happening on the bridge and the captain tells Tuvok to come, but she says also Neelix. Now I can't remember why Neelix's presence was required.
She wanted to tell him that he was going to lose his storage bay of ingredients.
Right, so, I mean, that's right.
She could have put that in an email.
But... Right. That's right. I mean, I totally forgot, even though I literally just watched the episode within the last 24 hours. But yeah, so the idea that the cook, because there's only one, he drops everything to go to the bridge. I'm like, maybe somebody else had an order in, you know, for whatever he was fixing. But yeah.
Yeah. It didn't seem like a particularly efficient thing in that he was, you know, telling this 5-minute story about where the eggs came from.
Yes.
Does he do that for everybody? Do they get different stories? Yeah. You're not going to get 150 people through that.
Star Trek. What would it be if we, you know, had nothing to pick apart the details for? But, you know, just going back to Voyager generally, so do you remember, when you saw Endgame, do you remember when you saw The Caretaker, the original episode?
I mean, it must have been... It's probably going to be something like a year after it broadcast, because it takes a while for the things to get through onto the VHS tapes at that point.
Right.
So it would probably be sometime 95, I guess, early 96 maybe.
Did it make an impression on you, or did you say like, I don't know if this is a series for me, or...
I would happily watch and have watched all of Star Trek, all of Voyager. We watched all of Enterprise. I think it was clearly doing some things differently because, you know, female captain was a new thing. And I liked the setup, you know, with the McKee crew and the kind of like, flinging them to the other side of the galaxy so they could do kind of separate adventures. And so I like the setup. I think there was some things about it that took a bit longer to grow on me. But, you know, I think in retrospect, going back and watching Next Generation and stuff, it's pretty ropey at the start as well. And, you know, takes a while to get going. I think all of the series just improved as they went along.
Yeah,
I know that this is heresy to say in a Voyager podcast, but I think DS9 is probably still my favorite of those shows. But you know, I don't think there's any bad ones.
As our friend Scott McNulty often says, all Star Trek is good Star Trek. I mean, if you like Star Trek, even watching a less than good episode is still fun.
And it also, this was a time when there wasn't that much Star Trek. It's not like now where they've got like eight shows in production or whatever they're doing.
And kids these days, they won't know what it's like to go decades between new Star Trek.
And we had to go to a shop and get tapes and things like that.
In my case, we had to be at home at exactly the right time to see it or not see it at all until it went into reruns. I like DS9 too. I mean, there's no show I would say, ugh, I would never rewatch it, you know, including Enterprise, which there are certain aspects of Enterprise that I like a lot. But, you know, they're so different, those two series. So it's interesting. You know, I have many friends who really love Deep Space Nine. Voyager's much more like classic TV from, you know, that earlier era where Deep Space Nine is more edgy, you know. I would not call Voyager edgy, really.
Well, I mean, there's some things, I guess. But yeah, Voyager, I guess, is kind of going back to the template of, well, we've got a starship, we've got a crew, and they'll go around and have adventures, and they're not going to be mm-hmm. in the same place twice.
Right.
And I think it was watching Deep Space Nine and watching Babylon 5 at roughly the same time. You know, you've got all these shows about space stations and starting the sort of big, long arc plots that really only kind of kicked off towards the end of, or more towards the end of Deep Space Nine and Voyager, I guess, to some extent. But yeah, I have not rewatched Voyager because I have something against it. It's just when you look at these things and it's like, oh, well, you've got seven series of 26 episodes each. It's like,
right.
That's kind of a commitment.
I know. It's like, you know, the same in podcasting, I would say. Before this show, I was doing Orphan Black, and we just watched every episode because we knew it was just 10 episodes a season, and yeah. there were only ended up being five seasons, which was quite good. It was ended up, you know, with one of the best finales, I would say, of a show. And then, you know, you could say, well, I'm going to cover every episode, but Voyager, yeah, it has like 190 episodes. I don't know, 100. I do know the exact number somewhere, but more than the number of podcasts I would like to commit to.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are episodes I'd just as soon not rewatch, you know, right away. And so this format of inviting people to come and discuss something that, you know, I think they would like, or, you know, in this case, we are paying homage a little bit to the Incomparable Network, which hosts this show, is also doing not one, but two episodes about Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. So we wanted to give a little backstory to that crew member of the Excelsior that did not appear in the movie, Tuvok from Voyager. And that was, I think it was worked really well how they put it together, showing that Tuvok, who is having some kind of mental meltdown, and he's got some kind of traumatic memory of dropping a girl off a cliff, which I thought was very traumatic. I mean, I didn't want to see that scene as many times as it was shown to us. But in order to figure out what's going on, he says, I have to do a mind melt. Normally I'd do it with a family member, but Janeway is his choice because even though she's not Vulcan, she is the closest thing he really has to a family member. The two of them are quite close. They had served together for quite a while. And as Tuvok says somewhere in this episode, I trust you, you know, more than anybody.
I like the way, you know, he has this first collapse and then he talks to the doctor about it. And mm-hmm. the doctor's like, and he says, you know, but you know, I don't think this happened. You know, this didn't happen to me or whatever. And the doctor's like, oh, it's just a repressed memory. Like, yeah, you really did drop some girl off a cliff. Let's try and like awaken this memory. I did like, you know, just before they do the mind meld, he has this, he's in his quarter building
blocks, you know,
blocks and repeating in some mantra, trying to, you know, that I am in control. And I was thinking watching that, I do find building stuff in Lego has a similar calming effect on me. So, you know, following the instructions or not following the instructions or whatever. And I kind of related more to Tuvok in that moment than I had for quite a while.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's certainly known for his rituals that help him. What's the word I'm looking for? He maintains his ability to be logical and to basically repress emotions, because we know that Vulcans underneath their cool exterior are a big mess of messy emotions. So they need these little tools to work on their composure. That's the word I'm looking for. There was an interesting bit right there, because Kes is also, I'm losing all my words today. What is the word? She's not psychopathic.
Empathic.
I mean,
she goes a bit psychopathic towards the end of her time as well, but I think, yeah.
Yes, she's an empath. She can read Tuvok's thoughts. They've worked together on this, and he, works with her on controlling hers. And there was something right at the end of that scene, because Kes comes in while he's building the blocks, and of course she's really fascinated. And I guess this is part of the padding of the episode we were talking about before. Yeah. But they talk about the blocks a lot. And first of all, I just have to say this. I like Kes the character, and I love the little elf-like outfits she wears. And she has one that I really like in this episode. But right as she's leaving his quarters, she just like turns around and she like says, "I know." And I'm like, wait, what do you know? I mean, we're just being reminded, you know, that they have some telepathic connection, not just, she doesn't have to use words.
I couldn't remember where this episode sat in her kind of like developing more abilities and eventually leaving the mm-hmm. crew. Is it towards that kind of time frame?
I believe it's in season 2. Now I'm going to look it up, because if only there were a spreadsheet with all the Voyager episodes listed. Oh, wait, there is. with short descriptions of each one. Yes, that would be me. One of the funny things with having this spreadsheet is that some people who have been on the show or are going to come on the show, they say, "This is my favorite episode." I'm like, "Really?" And then, you know, it's not one of mine. And then I watch it, and then I have to revise my evaluation on my spreadsheet. And
is that revising the evaluation of the episode, or revising the about the person? It's like you're going to make a note next to it saying, "Oh, this is James's favorite episode, so judge him accordingly."
Well, yeah. No, I mean, you know, I like to think the people I spend time with online, you know, are people whose judgments I value, even if I don't agree with them. And so, yeah, I've been talked into upgrading episodes to, you know, must watch from watch if you feel like it. And I think that I will end up with the whole spreadsheet eventually being 95% must watch. but there's certain episodes I'm still not going to tell people to watch. During season 2, Kes had come into contact. They all came into contact with the female caretaker mm-hmm. and a whole community of Ocampa. And they were trying to win Kes over using, you know, their powerful, superior mind controlling techniques, and Tuvok helped her in that. I remember that episode. It's called Cold Fire. I haven't watched it, but it is apparently one of my must-watch episodes. But then as season 3 goes on, as we know now, Kes's final season, basically, and she has more to do with her mind powers, learning how to use them.
I did think that she seemed a lot more confident in this particular episode than I had remembered from the initial bits of the first few seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with that, you know, "I know," as she left the quarters. I think it was, I like the setup that they, you know, they want to do an episode where they go back and see old crew members, and mm-hmm. they need to come up with a way to do it. And mm-hmm. apparently they already had this idea of doing this kind of virus that was a memory engram type thing, but they were going to do it with Janeway going back to her days. So they kind of just retooled that and it's like, well, who can we get in? And I mean, it's more interesting than doing it, I guess, as another time travel episode if you're already doing, you know, Trials and Tribulations at the same time.
Right.
I guess the thing that I was, that surprised me is going back and watching it is how little sort of Star Trek VI there is in this.
Yeah. You
know, there's kind of, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes sort of, I mean, I didn't time it out, but it feels like there's a lot less of it. You know, if you've got these people in, you know, why don't you make the entire episode, you know, George Takei, like dramatically walking through clouds of smoke.
Oh, yes. Like that was a great moment, a great reveal. And also the first time he speaks, I thought, he has an amazing voice, you know, just the sonorous quality of when he speaks and when he says things like, my God, you know, I'm like, this is awesome to see him.
I don't know if this is the last we see of Sulu in...
It is.
Because I think they had kind of floated the idea that this might lead to a Sulu series down the line or something.
Yeah.
Which, of course, never happened. But I mean, that would be a great way to get him to come in, is to say, "Oh, we're thinking about doing a Sulu series," and you know, get Grace Lee Whitney in as well, and and it doesn't sadly come to anything. But I was watching a thing, and it was just as a tangent. It was a YouTube video about appearances of Janice Rand through the shows, and there was all these like fan films and stuff, which I've never seen with her and George Takei and various people in them. And it's like, should I watch these things? Have you watched any of them?
I haven't watched any of them.
I don't want to call them ropey looking because, you know, these things are done on not television budgets or whatever.
Right.
I am curious anyway, because if we're never getting that Sulu series, I mean, who knows? If Patrick Stewart can get a new series at this point.
I think that sounds interesting too. I'd be sort of curious, but I have also pretty much always tried to stick to the canon stuff because my brain can only take in so many details and scenarios, and I even have a little trouble with the recent Star Trek movies, the Kelvin timeline, like trying to remember exactly how they fit in or don't fit in. And I have so much Star Trek to watch and rewatch that comes from, you know, from Star Trek headquarters, as it were, that it hasn't occurred to me to watch some of the unofficial stuff, but that does sound interesting. And I certainly am interested in Grace Lee Whitney and her experiences as a cast member of the original Star Trek, you know, which were terrible. And eventually she left the show because as a kid, so I watched it when I was in single digits as it came on. I think I was 6 years old when it first came out, and her character was very appealing to me because, you know, I mean, she was so beautiful. She had the amazing, amazing beehive hairdo, which to this day, I don't know how they make those hairdos other than as wigs, but she was a 1960s, you know, ideal version of a woman, a professional woman to me, you know, short dresses, you know, and all, because that was what they wore back then. But still, she was a character that always intrigued me, and we didn't get very much of her in the 60s. And I think there are some interesting interviews and articles, and she wrote an autobiography as well, of, you know, the aftermath of that experience working on the original series and then being able to come back and you know, come back to Star Trek, which honestly, I don't know if I could do that after going through such a harrowing experience as she did. But anyway, it's great to see her. I like her salty, I like her salty personality as the lieutenant commander here. And I also had to totally laugh when Tuvok gives her the Vulcan nerve pinch.
Yes. And Nez has a line about taking her clothes or whatever.
Yes, yes. Like Janeway's like, you could have asked her. And he says, like, asking female officers, you know, for their clothes could be misconstrued or something like that.
I think that, like, my favorite line of the show was the when Tuvok is making tea, and, you know, with her in the room, and she's like, oh, you're not going to have time to drink this. And he's like, oh, it's not for me. It's for Sulu. And Janeway just turns with an aside and says, you never brought me tea.
Yeah.
I love that.
I thought it was funny. I also thought, like, well, if he brought you tea, she would have said, like, what is that? I don't drink tea. I drink coffee.
But I hadn't realized, because I rewatched the scenes from Star Trek VI after I'd watched the episode, that it does tie in with the teacup.
Yeah.
He's holding at the start of the scene.
Yeah.
Puts down on the table and it falls off as Praxis explodes. So it was a nice tie-in that they used the tea.
Yes, I agree.
That now we know that it was really Tuvok who brought that cup in Star Trek VI.
Yeah.
And they did film it all in this, so it's different angles. So it's like Tuvok would be just standing off to the left or whatever in the film, but you never get that camera angle, so you can't sort of say, oh, well, he wasn't there. So
right.
It was very nicely done, and apparently they rebuilt the set, like the bridge set, in 2 weeks.
Wow.
With a lot of late nights and weekends and stuff. But it's pretty impressive as a match to the original for 2 weeks of work.
Yeah, it is. Definitely, if you don't rewatch all of The Undiscovered Country before or while watching this episode, you definitely just need to watch the first scene to understand how it fits in with that story. And, you know, and the themes of the episode that are interesting, this kind of admiration for the old style Starfleet officer behavior, which is reckless, as Tuvok rightly points out to Sulu, that going to rescue Kirk and McCoy is disobeying Starfleet's orders, and yet realizing that even Janeway admires that old style macho, if we want to put a word on it.
She says she wishes kind of she had served under like Kirk and Sulu and things, and I'm like, I don't think you would have wanted to serve under Kirk, really.
No, and she does appropriately add, like, they would have been booted from Starfleet, you know, today, but back then, I don't know, maybe it's even problematic as, like, this, like, nostalgia for behavior that is considered, you know, retrograde is possibly misplaced.
I mean, I think it's a kind of meta thing because, you know, they're talking about nostalgia and the whole episode is effectively nostalgia, even if it's only, you know, like 5 years ago nostalgia. And, and Tuvok has a line at the end, something about, I do not experience feelings of nostalgia. And it's like the whole episode is just like, we want to get Sulu back in and we want to have Janeway interact with him and things like
yeah.
that. I like the fact that she kind of has this sort of faintly wistful, you know, well, you know, I don't really want to do it, but it would be kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, she hasn't become an admiral yet, so.
Yes.
And, you know, she's certainly well known throughout the series for her insistence on maintaining you know, Starfleet standards. And she's herself at least a second generation Starfleet officer. So, you know, she has a certain kind of reverence for the whole setup, while still appreciating the fact that without the Kirks and Spocks and McCoys, there, you know, it's hard to have an exciting storyline if the whole show is about everybody actually doing what they're supposed to be doing.
It will be interesting to see what kind of Janeway we get when she's coming back to this animated series.
Yeah.
Which is it kind of like a sort of Starfleet Academy type thing? I'm not sure.
I don't, no, I don't think so. I think it's called Starfleet.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Starfleet Prodigy. Yeah, it's like kids take over a spaceship or something, I believe.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. I knew it was kids, but yeah, they like take over some. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It'll still be interesting to see whether they have her as Janeway or whether she's like a hollow Janeway or, you know,
Helen yeah. Player. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that. Although, as I've expressed before, I would really have liked to see Janeway show up in Picard and get to also, you know, interact with the new Seven of Nine.
Yes, that would be good. I mean, like with all of this stuff with Picard, now that they've done the first season, I think that there'll be a lot of people kind of like ringing their agents and saying, well, you know, if they asked, I'd be happy to be on it.
Yes, I do know that Robert Picardo has been campaigning for a while, and I think, you know, rightly so. He's, you know, he could be the EMH anywhere.
Yes. If a slightly older model.
A slightly older model, which, yeah, I guess that's a bit of a conundrum as well. And, yeah, so I do think, like, while the heart of this episode is about a virus, which I forgot. Yes. So I was like, oh, great, a virus. I, you know.
Yes, well.
An unknown virus, but one that it acts as a memory engram. It hides itself in the brain with a memory so traumatic that the brain will not seek to deal with it. It will repress it, and so the virus can continue to operate. And we know, you know, viruses do mimic certain kinds of, you know, life processes so that they aren't stamped out either by, you know, the body's own defense mechanisms or by, you know, vaccinations, because if they are too virulent, they kill the host also. You know, that's not a very good virus either. So the fact that we find out that it's a virus that is planted a memory, whether false or not, it's not Tuvok's memory of letting a little girl drop into the biggest chasm ever. And that the virus like moves, migrates between hosts when it thinks that its current host is dying or is, you know, is actually dying. And I thought that was interesting on the deck of the Excelsior, that this crew member of Valtrain, who Tuvok's bunkmate, actually, he is injured, mortally injured, you know, by an explosion. And Tuvok, while trying to help him, you know, gets the virus, which migrates to him. And that is the crux of it. You know, if you didn't know, you would not have guessed that's where they were going with this episode.
I mean, I don't think it's a particularly effective virus if it goes from one host to one host.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I don't know. I guess I can scan the rest of the crew now just to be sure. That's what I would do.
But, yeah, I mean, I like all the sort of like the kind of flashback, as the name of the episode is, where they're not just sort of stuck in one kind of time bit, like they mm-hmm. jump around a bit and they go back. Mm-hmm. Like, so as we said, when Janeway needs a uniform, they just kind of like hop backwards and, mm-hmm. and take it from Janice Rand. But yeah, it's the stuff kind of in the quote real world where the Doctor is trying to figure this out and saying things like, oh, Tuvok's got 20 minutes to live and or 20 minutes before. And then, of course, they can't break up the mind meld and Janeway's in there too. And, you know,
yeah.
It'll be fatal for her as well. So there's the kind of like the real stakes on the outside. not that you imagine they're going to kill off the two of them. But
no.
I liked that, although it kind of felt a bit like once they figured out it's a virus, they just sort of zap it with some energy and then that's it. And we don't really get a nice kind of finish to the Sulu era stuff. It's just mm-hmm. like, oh, they wake up.
I think
that the best bit, I guess, is when, you know, the mind meld is going badly and then Sulu can see Janeway.
Yeah.
And, I was sad that we didn't really get too much sort of interaction of her kind of talking to him rather than kind of like just continuing to talk to Tuvok and he's, you know, ordering her off the bridge and getting security in and all this
yeah. Yeah. It was interesting because it, since they had so little interaction, true interaction anyway, whether it was worth it to have this mind meld, you know, breakdown. Anyway, I don't know.
I also don't understand, like, just by stealing an appropriate uniform, she can stand on the bridge and go, who the hell are you?
Well, but, let me tell you about Star Trek security.
Yeah, I know. It's not very good.
One of the funnier lines to me was that, you know, once they figure out how they're going to deal with the Klingons that are tailing them out of the nebula, and Tuvok says, hey, it's got ceruleum in it. And Sulu says, that's very flammable, isn't it? Could we ignite it? And he says, that's like tossing a match into a pool of gas. I'm like, okay, that's like a metaphor. It's already 200 years out of date.
It's one of those metaphors that survives that nobody really understands what it means, but it's just...
And his order to Tuvok when he tells him to ignite the ceruleum is light the match. And I'm like, well, that is definitely not standard, like, bridge command speak. And that could be confused with something else. I think they did a very good job of weaving in a... you know, present day, aka 2373 story was something that happened 80 years earlier. And Tuvok was really the only one they could use for that because, as we know, Vulcans are old. And Tuvok, especially, has been around the block more than a few times. And the fact that they could tell basically what was a Star Trek medical story using... not using time travel, yet going back and making it somehow believable. And I think using Janeway very effectively because Vulcan or not, if you wanted somebody to be by your side to unpack some repressed memory, I think Janeway's the one you want.
Yes, definitely. I was wondering, I think Tuvok says he's like 25 or something.
Yeah, I think he's in his 20s at that
point. He's in his 20s, and I was thinking, how does that, like, compare? You know, because it's like the match thing. It's like we immediately go, oh, well, if he's in his 20s, then he's, you know, young and whatever. And I was like, I don't actually know how long a Klingon year is. Not Klingon, sorry, Vulcan year is.
Yeah, no, me neither. I don't know how long they live, but, you know, based on many Star Trek sequels and appearances of certain Vulcans, they seem to live very long.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarek shows up in TNG, and that's supposed to be a good 100 years later. And he was already kind of the old guy. But anyway, it's Star Trek. They never say that kind of thing, and it would be kind of interesting to know, like, the relative expected lifespans of the various species. Because obviously we know what the human, you know, relative lifespan is, although assuming in the future it's been extended, we don't know that for a fact either.
I mean, it might be that Tuvok just translates into Earth years, depending on who he's talking to, and a kind of the way I translate into Fahrenheit sometimes when I'm talking to Americans.
Yeah, that's true. We're talking Earth years as well, and that's just one planet in the Federation. I don't know how long a Vulcan year is.
I'm sure the listeners will write in and tell us exactly.
Yes. Well, I'll be sure to put it into the show notes if I can find a reliable source for that. So, well, did you like this episode, James?
Yeah, I did. I think I was slightly disappointed that we didn't get as much Sulu getting to do more Sulu things. Mm-hmm. But it was neat to see that. I always like when you see, like, one crew or people from one crew interacting with another crew and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it was fun. I think I could have done without, like, the 5 minutes on Neelix and the 5 minutes on how blocks work. because I felt, you know, well, that's taking time away from, but as we know, it happened the other way around, that they didn't have the stuff, so they needed to fill it in. But
yeah,
I would have liked another 5-10 minutes of Sulu.
Yeah,
it was nice to see, and I guess they were doing it on fairly presumably limited time frames. Like,
yeah,
we can only get George Takei for a week, so what can we do? But yeah, no, the whole, I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, it's a virus, but it's a memory or whatever, was a bit cheesy. But then that's probably like 100 other things in Star Trek where it's like, that doesn't make sense, but fine, we'll go with it.
Yeah, it had a lot of classic Star Trek notes, and that's one of them. Just go with it. This is this is what's causing the conflict that's making the story run. And I certainly do like Tuvok. I think he's one of the best Vulcans, and he got to be very Vulcan in this episode. And I like the Janeway Tuvok friendship. We see almost nobody else besides Neelix and the Doctor and Kes. And then Harry Kim comes in to explain something, which I thought was very interesting as well. James, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to watch this and come on the podcast and chit-chat about it, because I always have fun talking with friends about Star Trek.
Me too. I've now done both the incomparable Star Trek podcasts, so I another tick in the column.
Good.
And it's always nice to podcast with you.
Yes.
Well, because we get to do it every now and again, but I think we've never done it one-on-one like this.
I don't think so. I think we've been on episodes either about Doctor Who or Star Trek, you know, with other folks, and we have probably played Random Pursuit together. I don't remember who would have scored more points, but...
probably not me. And also that I've known you since before podcasting.
Oh, yes. I know. It's really quite a few years. I've known of you since one of my friends with a Mac said, have you ever tried this thing called drag thing? And
oh, yes.
And I was like, no, show me. You were kind of famous going back a long time before I was ever involved with Mac software, so...
There's a Mel Brooks line which I always think of, which is something like "world famous in Poland." It's like, I'm not famous, but in a very small circle, people might know who I am. But
yeah, we do appreciate all your hard work on your software, pCalc. I use it all the time, not nearly to its capabilities. I know it's like it's almost like having some kind of tricorder that I don't totally understand all the functions. But I use it for the most prosaic of math, and I like having it. And if you can't fix the dice to roll my way, well, maybe that's how it should be.
I did experiment with it. I did try and like create weighted dice in the physics engine, but they just didn't roll properly.
It's an interesting question because, of course, actual physical dice don't obey. I mean, obviously, they obey the laws of the physical universe, but they aren't so perfect that they are completely random necessarily every time. But that's a different podcast, the dice podcast.
Well, there's something I can do on the Incomparable.
Well, thanks again, James. And thank you, listeners, for being here. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @Voyager_cast. And if you like this podcast, you might want to check out all the other great shows at theincomparable.com and consider becoming a member, which gets you access to bonus episodes, bootlegs, and our special members-only Slack, where you can find me chatting about all things Star Trek with other podcasters and fans. I will be back in a couple of weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up.